Hello, good evening, welcome. I am Samuel Trapp. This is Damn Radio, and you happen to be listening to International Flavor with me, because that's why you're here. That's what everybody knows happens at 9 p.m. Sunday through Thursday, Chicago time or Missouri time. I've had so much going on in the past few days that I hate to say it, but I think I've left some people hanging, and I apologize for that. Sorry, but I've been a busy little beaver. I had an incredibly interesting day today, and I want to announce the most exciting portion of this, but before I do that, I want to let you know that all of my prior shows are out there at at internationalflavor.com. You can listen to them. You can listen to them all in order. That's what everybody should do. Go out and listen to my wisdom. That's what I'm saying. And you go out there and you check it out, and you or pick the topics that are of entertainment to you. I had a pretty good comment from a person who listens to me from Russia, and it made me feel really good. I got a comment on my Russian YouTube channel, which is at Samuel Trapp on YouTube. And if you like to listen to me in Russian, you can go out there and do it. Well, this guy on one of my Russian commentaries or one of my Russian little videos, I don't even remember, he goes out and he says, I listen to all of your radio shows on International Flavor. And he told me that he listened to the story with Ike Skelton and he thought it was awesome. And I got to tell you, I do too. I think that Sunday and yesterday, where I spent the all of the time, the entire time, talking about Ike and his standing up for people, has just made me feel really good about the fact that there are people like him out there that'll stand up against what they feel are injustices. And what they feel are not what our founders created, who love their countries and will do anything to back up the ideas of the founders as they see them. Now, I too like that status. I too like standing up for what I believe is right. And I know that we're not alone. You know, me and Ike aren't the only two out there saying stuff. I know quite a few of them, and there's a number of them on this station. And I think that we have our fair share, if not more, that are just fantastic people. And they're very well-versed, gifted, and know some things. And today I did an interview with a similarly situated individual, but more on the national level. And I'm going to do a deep dive into his tale, which is, you know, he's a very well-known person, and I truly enjoyed interviewing him today, and I honestly thought I was going to get when I convinced him to allow me to interview him. I thought I'd get, you know, half an hour, you know, or an hour if I was really lucky, and I have a hell of an interview lined up for you people, and it is with none other than Mr. Scott Ritter, former U.S. Marine, former arms control inspector in the same agency that I was a part of when I was doing treaty verification activities on the U.S. side. He was on the more on the inspection side, and I was more, and I came along, they created another division. So they used to all do and inspection and escort. And right before I came along, in early 90, I think it was, they changed it to, they had an escort division also. So they had a, what do you call it? An inspection division and an escort division. And it was the on-site inspection agency. And we, the bulk of my job was escorting people, you know, Russian nuclear scientists for the Nuclear Threshold Test Ban Treaty and INF, Intermediate Range Nuclear Forces Treaty, Russian inspectors and military people who would come and eliminate intermediate range nuclear weapons. And today's the day. I saw in the news today, and I'm trying to find the article, that today's the day that Russia finally gave up on the INF treaty today. Now, Trump bailed out of the INF treaty back in 2019, alleging that the Russians weren't living up to their obligations under that treaty. Now, I'm not involved. I don't know who's telling the truth and who's lying. So when I say this, don't say, oh, geez, he hates his country and blah, blah, blah. It's not what I'm saying. But at the time, the Trump administration was accusing the Trump 1, by the way, or 45, whatever you want to call him, was accusing the Russians of not complying and doing other things. And the Russians were saying, well, then let's go through the verification procedures. We have a verification set of procedures. And the Americans wanted to do it, but didn't want to reciprocate, is what the Russians say. And so Trump backed out of the INF treaty in the terms of it. The Russians have said that they still honor that treaty all the way through until today. And I'm trying to find the story where it is a better story, because there's a lot going on. I spent the last 2 days talking about Ike's case, analyzing his case files, and truthfully, there's been a lot of activity watching or listening to those two videos, because a lot of people are interested. Ike is, like I said, he's kind of a hero of mine now, because he is standing up for this kind of thing. And you know, I really hope everything works out for him, and that everything goes just well for him. And I really hope it does, and I hope he wins, however you want to call it. Or, you know what, as long as it ends well for him, I'm a happy camper. And there are so many stories out that I wanted to get to, because I haven't talked about any of the geopolitics stories, any of the war stories, any of the strange international stories that there are plenty of. And I want to get to those. I've been saying that for 2-3 days, because there has been a lot of news occurring in the meantime. But I wanted to spend just a few minutes today encouraging people. If you don't know who Scott Ritter is, he is very vocal about quite a few things. Come to find out, I didn't think it was possible, but we have, not that we wouldn't have, what do you call it, similar interests, similar beliefs, but I've watched a couple of his videos, and he didn't say anything about it when I interviewed him today, but he doesn't like Lindsey Graham any more than I do. So if you got anything that would make him definitely a kindred spirit for me, it's the fact that Lindsey Graham is, you know, Graham Cracker is, or Graham the Cracker is, can I call him a cracker? if I'm not of color? Is that allowed? I don't know. Well, it's probably bad to say stuff like that anyway. But I call him Graham the Cracker. Medvedev called him Gramps instead of Graham last week on his X account or whatever. Maybe it was on a different one. I don't think it was on Vkontakte, which is VK, which is a Russian source, and similar to Twitter. But I had such a good, it turned out, and Scott said something about, well, a very long time into our discussion, I had said something like, look, you gave me a lot more time than I was going to take. And he said, this long ago stopped being an interview. And so I believe I have a real treat for us on Sunday night to listen to. And I have it on video. And what I'm trying to do is, and I don't know how to edit video. I have no clue. But there's some things that I got to fix. We had one small snafu where we lost internet for a little bit on his end or my end, don't know which. And so we have a few minutes of dead air. I don't know if JR is familiar with it, but I'm uploading it to the studio, recording studio, as we speak, and I'm hoping that maybe he can help, because otherwise I'm gonna have to buy something simple and off the shelf to figure out how to do it, you know, myself. Or maybe he can just tell me not to worry about it, and he will do it. JR, hello, how's the family? Anybody there? At any rate, I was so pleased with the interview and pleased with the content. And I want to encourage everyone to listen to my deep dive on Sunday night, because I haven't come up with a title yet for what I do plan to call the episode, but I had hoped to speak with him. And there's so many things that I wanted to speak with him about, because I believe we do have, you know, quite a bit in common. He has been all over Russia. He has participated in the arms control. He went to the Middle East and was an arms control inspector for the Iraq, you know, weapons of mass destruction timeframes. But I, of course, didn't do that. But I lived in Qatar for a year, and I have some familiarity with the Middle East. I have some familiarity. I've been to 54 countries, and he's been all over. He's, you know, UN guy, but more importantly, and the reason I wanted to talk to him is because he's a patriot too. He had, and the story I wanted to talk to him about is very similar to what has happened to me with targeting by a-holes in the government, very similar to what has happened to Ike. I've spoken to several other people with similar stories that I plan to take some of their stories, usually once a week. You know, I don't want to go overboard on it, but it's a big topic, you know, with our government out there slamming normal people. And, you know, these people that use the government as their own personal weapon to target and destroy people, it's nonsense. And after this, he gave me some time and a great story. And we're going to dig into it on Sunday evening. And in the meantime, I'm going to try to upload the video of it as well, and have it translated into Russian to have it uploaded. And that's going to be a little bit on the entertaining side. I'm looking for a platform to get that done. And it was a very enlightening. He's, you know, I thought I might have met him before. I remembered his name for sure. And we kind of joked about a little bit of it, because he was the guy, since he was one of the first in the on-site inspection agency, a lot of the training materials that I was going through in the language courses had his name in it. So I could be mistaken, but it might have been that he was gone slightly before I came, you know, to the agency. But I don't know. I remember his name, and I thought I might have met him, but I definitely knew his name. Now, he wouldn't know my name. I was, you know, a lowly interpreter. In, well, you're never lowly in that position. We were all top of our game, no doubt. And we were, he said it today, best of the best, you know, like in Top Gun and whatnot. We were top dogs back then. And we had a little bit of discussion on Russian and on politics and on stuff like that. But I tell you what, I want to encourage everyone to listen on Sunday. Frankly, I'd like to put it out earlier, but I don't think I'm going to have time to get all of the things done that I want to get done in order to get it prepped for what I would like. And I would like the video to go out at the same time so you can have the choice to go and watch it on my YouTube channel or, you know, see our interaction and what happened, or have it translated into Russian and have it all go up at the same time. But it is a killer story. And I wanted to start with, you know, how he was banned off of YouTube, and he gave me the complete rundown, and it is a hell of a story, and I am honored to have been able to listen to it. Now, I've heard bits and pieces of it, you know, over the years, over the several things, and because, you know, part of that interests me. But if you remember, it was last June, July? I don't remember, but he had his passport taken away right before he was going to Russia for the St. Petersburg Economic Forum and International Economic Forum, and he was going to be a keynote speaker. He told me the entire story, and then he had his home raided by the FBI, and that's an interesting story. And I got it all, and I'm honored to have heard it direct from the horse's mouth, and I am gonna share it with you, and it is truly a hell of a story. And my impression of him, even though I always felt pretty good after watching all of his stuff, you know, on the internet and whatnot, and watching his, over the last week or two, he's been very critical of the, seems like he's critical over some of the same excessive things that, in my view, that I am, you know. I'm not anti-Trump, you know, but I'm anti-Trump's, I'm anti-Trump, I don't know what, drama, you know. I don't really like the tweeting. It drives me crazy. I don't like the fight he gets into on X or Twitter or whatever the hell you want to call it with Dmitry Medvedev, and announces that he's sending nuclear submarines to, you know, close to Russia, because on a tweet, you know, a post on X, and those kind of things just bother me. You know, I would like to see, I don't know. I just feel like it's not very presidential. You know, if I wanted 15-year-old social media tactics, it would be a little bit different. But I don't mind him using the platforms. I'm not against that. But the way you do it is important. The way you speak and the way you project yourself. So I don't understand why I have to say that I'm not anti-Trump, because I'm not anti-Trump. I just want to make sure that I don't know. I'd prefer a little bit more presidential. I watched something similar about the nuclear sub things from Jeffrey Sachs as well. And he was being interviewed by, what is his name? That Napolitano guy. He was being interviewed. And I don't like or dislike Napolitano. I was more interested in listening to Jeffrey Sachs, and it gave him a platform, and I listened to it, and that thing came out just, you know, in the last few days too, might even been today, I don't know. But I listened to his commentary on it, and, you know, one of the two of them mentioned that, listen, you know, we're sending and we're talking about nuclear submarines. The Russians have three times or four times the nuclear sub fleet that we have. And I remember those numbers being, you know, fairly close to that. And I'm just afraid all this escalation, and I want to get into the BRICS thing tonight, and I want to get into my thoughts on a lot of that, because it's these are crazy times, and part of me fears for where we are going from here. But initially, I want to start with Moscow's comments on the collapse of the U.S. arms control treaties, including the INF treaty. And this is truly depressing to me as a person who fought. Well, I didn't fight. It wasn't a fight. I wore a suit and tie. You know, I was not involved in any fighting. And, you know, I was in the military during Iraq 1 and I think even Iraq 2. But I never got called up for battle. I was an interpreter, a Russian interpreter at that. But Russia has said that it has the right to deploy ground-based intermediate-range missiles when it deems necessary following the collapse of the 1987 Intermediate-Range Nuclear Forces Treaty with the U.S., said Dmitry Peskov, Kremlin spokesman. Moscow previously opted not to station such weapons in certain regions unless the U.S. and its allies did so first. But on Monday, the Russian Foreign Ministry announced that the actions of Western countries have made Moscow's adherence to the moratorium no longer viable, as they were creating a direct threat to Russia's security. And this is depressing to me. You know, when I was engaged in these activities back in the early 90s, it was, you know, we're doing some great things. The Soviet Union and America were not friends. They were not partners, but they were adversaries. But they still worked together to do what? To make the world a safer place. Where is that? Where is diplomacy? We have Joe Biden doesn't talk to Russia for more than 3 years. Not a word. Diplomatic silence. And we were in the Cold War forever, and yet they talked, and yet they tried to keep the world a safer place, and yet they had functions together and met together and were decent in their diplomatic engagements. There were few rough spells, Cuban Missile Crisis, Reagan's Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall, you know, these kind of things. And we outspent them and helped run them into the ground and then turned them into the 90s and let them twist in the wind. We pushed. We turned them into enemies that they weren't. And if anything, that my discussion with Mr. Ritter came out today, it was the fact that we're pretty much kindred spirits on that end. And he made some great commentary when we were talking about it, that, you know, it's like the experts that he said some of the same things that I've said, that the experts they've hired, and I'm not using his exact words, but the experts they use today have no idea what it means to have what the soul of Russia is. They have no idea, nor do they care on top of that, because they're supposed to be our enemies, you know? I truly hope I get an opportunity to chat with him some more. By the way, I don't know if I said this tonight, but if you feel like calling in, you may do so, 573-746-8020, and I'd be happy to talk with you. You got questions, I'm eager to talk, and well, that's what I do every day, is I talk too much, but here I am. So when asked on by journalists to comment on Tuesday, Peskov said that Russia no longer has any limitations in this regard regarding the INF Treaty and no longer considers itself bound by anything. And so the INF Treaty limited the deployment, and we were limited in where you could put them in ranges of 500 kilometers to 5,500 kilometers, these intermediate and short range nuclear capable weapons. And so now with Moscow saying they no longer have it, they've heard that the U.S. is planning on moving some into Europe more and doing some things like that. And so the Kremlin spokesman did not elaborate on whether decisions on potential missile deployments had already been made. I told you a couple of days ago that I listened to Putin and Lukashenko in their interview in Russia at a church, in the garden of a church, a cemetery of that church, and they were discussing the deployment of the Oreshniks into Belarus, and said that that's going to take place by the end of the year. And so that, you know, should, I don't know, that frightening, you know, it's Belarus, you know, and we are putting all kinds of missiles all over Europe, according to some popular belief. I don't know that to be true. I haven't seen any documentation on that, but I hear that that is what is going on. So Moscow reserves the right to deploy missiles when it deems necessary. The Kremlin did not elaborate on whether decisions had already been made. One can hardly expect any announcements here, Peskov said, describing it as a question of national defense and a sensitive and secret field. The INF Treaty between the U.S. and the USSR bound ground-launched missiles with ranges of 500 to 5,500 kilometers. It collapsed in 2019 when Washington unilaterally withdrew from the agreement during Trump's first term. The U.S. justified the move by claiming alleged Russian violations. Moscow denied the claims and accused the U.S. itself of developing banned missiles. Russia called on NATO and the U.S. to exercise restraint, refrain from deploying such systems, as it announced its own moratorium on their deployment. Russia fated its own moratorium. But last year, Moscow warned it would lift its own moratorium after the U.S. announced plans to deploy long-range weapons into Germany in 2026. On Monday, the foreign ministry cited the deployment of a Typhon missile launcher in the Philippines by the U.S. last year as yet another reason behind the policy change. So I don't know. I hate to see stuff like this. Drives me bananas because it is so foolish, you know, just foolish. And on both sides, by the way, it's not just us. Or not just Russia or us, you know, it's both. And it's, I don't like it. Let's see. I have so many, it's, I have so many stories that I haven't covered in several days, certainly since last Thursday, because Sunday was Ike, Monday was Ike, today's only Tuesday. Tomorrow, by the way, is the biggest day in radio, and Ike will be on tomorrow night, and I'm very looking forward to his show. I forget what time he comes on. I'll have to pull up the schedule when you can find the schedule yourself at damradio.com/schedule. And I'm pulling it up even as we speak. And he will be on the Ike Skelton Show. I thought so. I just didn't want to misspeak. He will be on at 6 p.m. tomorrow night. And You know, he usually goes a couple hours. He'll be done at 8. I'll be back at 9. And so I'll certainly be making sure to listen to his show, because I want to hear all of the things that he has to chat about. And man, I want to talk about bricks, but I hate to just jump all over with a bunch of different topics all at once. Let's see if I can keep some other ones going on. Looks like this one was several times. I've pulled this one up a few times. Looks like I got quite a bit to talk to Bricks about, and I have some funny things to discuss as well. But there's an opinion piece, or maybe it's called a feature piece. And by the way, we talked quite a bit about RT, Russia Today is what it used to be called, but now it's RT TV, and some of my thoughts. And I pulled all the lawsuits from the Department of Justice on RT that I had read. You know, I may have read some of them on this program to you. And Scott Ritter and I chatted about some of the topics on that. And I'm telling you, it's another part of our rather lengthy discussion. We had time it was all said and done. We had like a 3 or 4 minute internet outage, or whatever you want to call it, difficulty getting it together. But we were on for nearly 2 hours. And so my show on Sunday will have a lot of content and some very interesting thought concepts. And you know, we never even got into the true foreign policy stuff. This was more about him being targeted and him being a hero, kind of like Ike is, you know, being targeted somewhat kind of like I am. And although I don't really want to slap myself too hard on the back, but I stood up for some things to my own detriment still. And I, you know, I hope things go my way on some things I'm trying to repair and get back to where I ought to be, because frankly, Ike doesn't deserve what happened to him. Scott Ritter doesn't deserve what happened to him, and I don't deserve what happened to me. And government overreach, being targeted by government individuals at all kinds of levels, it's far past the time that we figure out how to attack these things. And maybe it means changing the law. Maybe it means making people more aware. I've had a tiny bit of an epiphany, and part of it was pounded into my head by some close friends of mine. And I won't mention their names, but you know, I definitely appreciate it when sometimes I haven't been able to get over it. And here I am on this program and doing one of the things that I truly love and always have loved, is just getting on and telling my story and my side of the story. And I remember I wrote something down one day, and I found a scrap of paper about it today, and I had completely forgotten about it. And I thought about taking a because I truly believe it works this way for Ike, for me, for everybody. And everybody remembers Star Wars and Obi-Wan Kenobi when Darth Vader strikes him down, and his last words were, "You may strike me down, but if you do, I shall become more powerful than you can possibly imagine." Well, Ike said something similar the other day when I was interviewing him on Sunday. He said, "You know, you would think they'd prefer to have me is in a position as a commissioner, as an elected official," is what he said, "because then I am constrained by some level of decorum," you know, he said. "But if I don't have that, I go, you know, for lack of a better expression. I'll say it, balls to the wall. I'll go all out. I'm all in, you know, to use a gambling term. I'm all in. Well, part of me feels that way, you know, that here I have this platform. And part of the reason that I was targeted anyway was because I was on the radio, because I was suing government officials, because I wasn't quiet and I wasn't, you know, I wasn't afraid of those things. And so I was targeted for destruction. Scott Ritter targeted for destruction, and he's not destroyed. Ike Skelton targeted for destruction, and he's not destroyed. No, we're not alone. You know, these are, I know plenty more, just myself, who have been targeted for destruction, and they're still kicking. You know, I tell you what, I have that sense of loss because I lost something that I shouldn't have lost due to bad actors in government roles. And not the loss. The loss I take full responsibility for, but not being able to come back, what they did to me is BS. And, you know, that's a story you can go out and listen to on my program anytime you want. It's out there at International Flavor. Go listen to it. I've talked about that a few times. But I feel kind of more positive about it after. You always feel you're alone like that, you know, and like Ike kind of intimated some of that today. You always feel like you're the only one being targeted. And I'm not saying it's all right, because it's not. But it kind of puts a little bit of perspective on it for you. And, you know, the targeting against me, I'm a piker compared to the targeting that Scott Ritter went through. And so I don't know. I keep going back to that because it was a big part of my day today. And I'm hopeful that we can edit that. I don't know if JR knows how to edit a video on there, but it's uploading to the recorder, recording computer even now. And it's says it's still got 11 minutes remaining to, till it's finally uploaded there. So I don't know. I was going to try it out on there with one of his, I don't know if it'll edit videos. If not, you know, I'll download something and see what I can find out. I want to read this this opinion piece that says Russia is bringing its missiles back, and this time it's personal. Now, this is from RT. This is from Russia, the RT news source, and it's a somewhat lengthy article, but you know what? It's an important topic. We are ignoring globally peace. And, you know, people like to point out on our side, the Lindsey Grahams of the world, the Z monsters of the world, now the Trumpster. But I believe he's been co-opted by his advisors, who are all neocon and all globalist. And, you know, I'll throw out the LG, the LG element, because he's the biggest cheerleader for war that exists, in my opinion. And I can just imagine the story. Imagine this, how the scene fades in to the Kyiv, residence where Zelensky is, and there's Blumenthal, and there's old Lindsey Graham cracker, and they're getting ready to meet, and you hear Zelensky going, "Look, I need this, I need, and Trump will give him Trump," and you hear him complaining, and then you fade over to the corner, and there's Blumenthal, and there's Lindsey Graham, and they invite him over. This Mr. Z Man, come over here, come chat with us. Let's calm you down. Listen, Trump pretty soon, you know, he's gonna realize because We got your back. You just don't talk to him directly. We'll take care of that for you. Don't poke him because he doesn't like it. Let us do this for you. You'll be fine. We'll get you your money. You realize they're asking for $54 billion more for him for this year from the Trump administration to sign it. And I thought we were done with this. But I guarantee you this has been the thing all along, is to get them to do it. And how do they do it? They have corralled, you know, and they have blame Putin. And everybody knows, who knows anything about this from a professional level, that it's a bad terminology for how they put this together and for blaming Vladimir Putin. Even Donald Trump blaming Vladimir Putin. Vladimir Putin has been ready to settle this for a set amount of things, and nobody wants to. All they want is that 30-day ceasefire, rebuild, restart. Putin says, listen, I'm not going to do this if we have to do it again in 2 years. This is what Trump is trying to force. This is the misconception out there that we blame Putin, but Putin isn't to blame. You don't have to believe me. You don't have to do anything. But let's go back to the bigger picture now, because now what are we doing? Ramping up the Cold War again? Is that what we're going to do? We're going to go back to putting intermediate range nuclear weapons all over Europe and all over Russian satellite countries, which really are only Belarus now. But are we going to put them in the Black Sea? What are we going to do? What are we going to do? We go put them in Crimea now. We're going to hope that some of Russia's still remaining allies, if you want to call them that, in the Eastern European area might allow something, might still be there. Are we going to ramp it up? That's exactly what's happening. And it's a frightening condition. So let me tell you about this. This is an opinion piece. And on August 4th, the Russian Foreign Ministry announced that Moscow is abandoning the unilateral moratorium on the deployment of ground-based intermediate and short-range nuclear missiles, the INF-class missiles. This decision comes amid what Russian officials describe as ongoing expansion of U.S. missile systems in Europe and the Indo-Pacific, including weapons once banned under the now-defunct INF Treaty. U.S. has been placing such systems in key regions on a potentially permanent basis, undermining strategic stability and creating a direct threat to Russia's national security. Now, remember, this article is written from the opposing point of view, not the U.S. point of view, okay? Just so you know, and you can feel about it, but you have a right to know that. Moscow is preparing military technical countermeasures in response and is lifting all its own political constraints on the development and deployment of these systems. Here, RT, Russia Today, examines the situation through the lens of leading Russian military experts who described the move as a long-anticipated, technically overdue, and strategically inevitable escalation. The assessment shed light on Moscow's doctrinal shift, future deployment options, and broader geopolitical implications for Europe and for the ongoing conflict in Ukraine. Russia's rationale, let's go into that a little bit. Moscow has shown restraint for several years after the U.S. withdrew from the INF Treaty in 2019. Legally freed from its obligations under the accord, Russia still opted for a self-imposed moratorium and vowed not to deploy ground-based intermediate-range nuclear missiles unless similar U.S. systems appeared near its borders. but that no longer applies. It points to a broader U.S. and allied effort to institutionalize deployment of such missiles across multiple theaters. Here's some examples. The deployment of a Typhon missile launcher in the Philippines under the guise of a drill, with the system remains in place even after exercises were concluded. Testing of the PRSM missile in Australia during 2025. Future variants projected to exceed 1,000 kilometers in range. The planned deployment of SM-6 interceptors in Germany by 2026, launching from the same Typhon system. All these are banned, right? Or well, they're supposed to be under the treaty, but the U.S. took off from them. And so Russia's still been watching, though. Russia views these developments as a destabilizing missile buildup that threaten national security at a strategic level. Foreign Ministry stated that Moscow will undertake military technical responsive measures with precise configurations to be determined by Russian leadership based on interagency analysis and the evolving strategic environment. Officials referenced an earlier warning issued in June 2025 when Deputy Foreign Minister Sergei Ryabkov said that Russia's moratorium was approaching a logical conclusion in light of sensitive missile threats being fielded by the West, including those I named above, Australia and Germany. And the Philippines. While Russia's announcement marks a formal policy shift, experts argue that the conditions for abandoning the moratorium have been building for years due to the development on the U.S. side. According to military analyst Ilya Kramnik, a research fellow at the Center for Strategic Planning Studies at the Russian Academy of Sciences, the deployment of INF-class systems by the U.S. and its allies makes Russia and its restraint functionally obsolete. In principle, Russia has long had reason to consider itself free from any constraints of the INF Treaty. But this week's statement appears to be synchronized with the start of deliveries of the Oreshnik, like I told you, missiles to the armed forces and to Belarus, because they say that's going to happen by the end of the year. The U.S. began laying the groundwork for such ground-based missiles in 2021, when it launched the formation of the Multi-Domain Task Force, mobile army units designed to integrate long-range firing, precision strike, and battlefield networking. These units were to be equipped with Tomahawk cruise missiles using the Typhon launcher, a land-based containerized system derived from the naval MK-41 vertical launch platform. Second such group, the second MDTF, was formed in Germany, said Kramnik, with a clear orientation toward the European theater. Meanwhile, Typhon has been actively deployed in the Indo-Pacific, most notably in the Philippines, where it arrived during bilateral exercises but wasn't withdrawn. Surprise, surprise. The U.S. has also resumed tests of the PRSM missile in Australia. That's a platform that in future iterations is expected to exceed the 1,000-kilometer range, placing it well within INF classification. Plans for SM-6 missile deployment in Germany by 26 also, via the Typhon system, contribute to Russia's concerns. Although originally designed as a naval interceptor, the SM-6 has evolved to a multi-role weapon with conventional strike capability. Taken all together, these moves prompt Russian officials to conclude that the U.S. is pursuing a strategy of sustained forward missile presence across both Europe and Asia, effectively restoring the kind of reach that the INF Treaty once prohibited. The military technical reality thus has changed. The political gesture simply reflects that shift. So, Russia has a shift in its doctrine. With the self-imposed moratorium lifted, Russia is expected to move very rapidly toward expanding its own inventory of ground-based, intermediate, and short-range missile systems. The focus, according to Russian defense experts, will be not on production, but on doctrinal adaptation and forward deployment. One of the central components of Russia's future arsenal Is the Oreshnik a mobile platform widely viewed as the successor to the Soviet-era pioneer, the SS-20, which is what we were eliminating in the INF Treaty? And there you would, those are the big rail systems that you see from, I suppose the best thing to say is from Spies Like Us. You remember with Dan Aykroyd? Is they had those big trucks, those missiles that are on the back, right? And so that mobile platform was the SS-20. The weapon was first publicly hinted the Oreshnik in 2023, and they had several deliveries to Russian troops were reported to be have begun in mid-2025. The expiration of this moratorium is long overdue, said Vasily Kashin, director of the Center for Comprehensive European and International Studies. Kashin noted that Soviet missile forces had previously considered positioning Pioneer-class systems in the northeast of the country, including near Anadyr in Chukotka, from where missiles could potentially reach deep into the U.S. mainland, including San Francisco. Modern deployment patterns, however, are likely to prioritize northwestern and southern Russia, given their proximity to NATO territories. In addition to Oreshnik, experts expect land-based variants of the Kalibr and the Tsirkon missile families to be introduced, along with new ballistic versions of the Iskander. This is not good, people. This is bad news. We will likely see a full spectrum of platforms, cruise, ballistic, and hypersonic, said Dmitry Stefanovich, co-founder of the WAT4 think tank. These systems are already being incorporated into various service branches, not just the strategic missile forces, but also the ground forces and the Navy coastal units. Stefanovich added that Belarus will likely receive early deployments and that newly formed missile brigades may emerge all across Russia's military districts by the end of 2025. Europe in the crosshairs gives echoes to the Cold War. The lifting of the moratorium revives a security dilemma once thought relegated to Cold War history. The deployment of nuclear-capable intermediate-range missiles on the European continent. It feels like we ought to be playing war games with Matthew Broderick. You know, this is very depressing to me. I just don't like it. The current trajectory evokes the Euro missile crisis of the Cold War, said Sergei Osnobishchev, director of the Institute for Strategic Assessment. U.S. allies are not merely accepting new deployments, most are actively seeking them. Alongside U.S. systems, European initiatives such as the ELSA program and missile developments in South Korea and Japan are reshaping regional balances. This is no longer just a bilateral arms race. While primarily strategic in nature, intermediate-range missiles may also play a role on the battlefield, particularly in Ukraine. We're likely to see more combat testing of these missile systems as part of the special military operation. Their ability to strike deep, fast, and precisely makes them valuable against air defense and critical infrastructure. He predicts that Russia will form a new multi-role missile formations, including equivalents of the American MDTF, capable of integrating strike systems, air defense, electronic warfare across all branches. We are at the beginning of a multi-directional arms race. Jeez, that's great, isn't it? Although some experts suggest that a new arms control regime may emerge, the current consensus, including mine, is pretty clear. Restraint is over, and military technical competition is accelerating, unfortunately, quite quickly. The global trajectory is clear. Deterrence is back, and it is being redefined. I find that article depressing. I just do. There's so much commentary. Sometimes I like to share it. Here's one. Any kind of military confrontation with Russia means a serious rearranging of the stones in Western capitals and losses no NATO nation, especially the U.S., has any historic experience with, except Germany. And Russia is pushing for peace while the West is pushing for war. Here's what I thought was, well, it's not funny. It's actually kind of sad. Lord Jesus, please hurry back and take us out of this world before these nations' leaders kill us all and destroy the world. I don't know. This is nuts. I can't take it. I just can't take it. Let's maybe we'll go on to something hopefully a little lighter in nature. Where is it? Well, we'll do one more. Okay. We'll do one more about Germany, because Germany, but we already talked about that. This one's a much more in-depth article about Germany seeking out the 2,000-kilometer range U.S. missile launchers, the Typhon class systems that they were talking about. They really are doing that. These are nothing that I said to you is false. Okay, it's just not false. It'd be even though it's written from the point of view of the Russian side, it's definitely not false. It's pretty sad when you have to go to Russia to get good news. Good news. This was not good news. I mean, fairly spoken news. News that gives you the facts without twisting you too far one way or the other. You know, if this was written in the West, they would be talking about, look at these Russians, they're going to attack us. Nobody has said that in this article. It has said, you know, it's an arms race. Here we are again. If this article was written by anybody in the mainstream media over here, would have talked about Russia's continual aggression, Russia's this, Russia's that, and how evil we are. But Russia doesn't return the favor, even if you say that RT is a state-run news program, and it does receive a buttload of money from the Russian government for it. It isn't so twisted that it's unreadable, which is the unfortunate part of a lot of Western news media. Sad, but freaking true. I don't know. Where are we going to go after this? I wanted to go to here. So I don't know who's been paying attention or if you have, but I haven't talked about BRICS in a full week. Okay. And these arms control, one of the things I should play you a chunk of what, Jeffrey Sachs said today, but I haven't teed it up. I don't have it teed up, and I don't want to go hunting for it. So I'm just going to paraphrase it and tell you what the bad news is, because with this insistence by Donald Trump that Putin and Putin alone is responsible for the war continuing in Ukraine. You know, nobody else is to blame. Nobody else has any duty to ratchet it down some. Russia is supposed to accept Kellogg's plan, which is, why don't you give Ukraine all their land back? Yeah, like that's ever going to happen. They know it's not going to happen. And so to go out and require it as if it's going to happen, and as if you can stop it, the war, by saying that to them, you got to have your head examined. You better pull your heads out of some very dark places. because it's not going to work. Lindsey Graham Cracker, who is the one, the attack dog for the old Trumpster, even now, it's not going to work. And so let us begin at the beginning. Here is what Trump is saying. And we're almost, what is it, Friday that this is supposed to happen? That Trump is supposed, and it's supposed to be even sooner with India. Isn't India supposed to happen like tomorrow morning or something? Where they are, Trump is introducing another crazy set of Lindsey Graham sanctions against Russia, which aren't going to work. And, you know, targeting of the shadow fleet. There was an article that I looked at today that talked about they're expecting some kind of attack on one of their, some kind of that one of their shadow fleet or one of their tankers, preferably in a place like where it's going to cause a lot of damage and will plug up a corridor for where they can continue to export oil so that it just plugs it all up. And so there's been a threat assessment of that. There are threats to trade partners. There are plenty of these stories to go around. But they're already starting. Now, remember what Lindsey Graham Cracker is saying here. He is saying that, you know, and he's convinced Trumpster that this is the way to go, like it's actually going to happen, and it's not, that we impose more sanctions against Russia, and Russia will start crying and wringing their hands, going, "Oh, geez, let us apologize. Why don't we withdraw and give everything back to Ukraine?" Because that's obviously, you know, Ukraine's winning, which they're not. And let us run away, run away, run away, oh, run away. And we're all supposed to just run away. Why? Because you have sanction package number 18 from the Graham Cracker and the 19th one already on the horizon, $54 billion that Graham is looking to provide. There was a story about, what is her name? Marjorie Taylor Greene saying that, listen up. This is nonsense, what you're pushing for, and this is not why people elected you. The where is her story? I got nothing. But we'll find it. Well, if it's really important. Basically, she's saying this isn't what Trump was elected to do. And he runs the risk of, and here we are, going to put another $54 billion into Ukraine. For what? I mean, seriously, for what? Has the equation changed somehow? Has the equation changed? Is there something now that we need out of Ukraine? Is there something that says this is critical for the American public, other than to Lindsey Graham, you know, who's never met a war he couldn't love, you know? And he accused Medvedev of warmongering. Now that's freaking rich, you know. Lindsey Graham accusing anybody of warmongering. I mean, compare him to anybody. That guy should have a rifle in his hand at all times. Hell, he's the one who ought to be dressed in green, not the Green Goblin. It ought to be Lindsey Graham Cracker, and he ought to be just green, green, green. Oh, boy. I got to get off that topic. I'm going to get myself all worked up, and I want to go into the BRICS and anywho, and talk about these threats to Russia's trade partners and what they have said. Okay, now I prefaced it a little bit. I gave some short versions of this and little snippets over the last week or so, but here's some big deals for you. Okay, you have allegedly China, India, Brazil, and now South Africa. I've been looking for a story on South Africa for a while to see what theirs is. Now, India has already said, you know, bite me. We aren't going to quit trading with Russia. China has said, what? Bite me. We're not going to stop trading with Russia. We're a sovereign nation, and we choose who we trade with. India said the same thing, and I'll get into a story about Modi going to Russia quite soon. And then Lula in Brazil, what has he said? Bite me, doesn't matter. And now South Africa. Let us have a look at the South Africa and say Pretoria's international relations minister said the following. South African international relations minister Ronald Amola said to Pretoria currently lack an ambassador to the U.S., and it hasn't affected the country's ability to negotiating an agreement following Washington's decision to impose a 30% tariff on imports. Speaking at a joint media briefing on Monday, Lamona addressed the diplomatic fallout after the former South African ambassador was expelled in March. We had an ambassador to the U.S., and that ambassador was expelled. The fact that our ambassador was expelled means that now a new process to appoint the ambassador will not be easy as we thought it would when an ambassador had not been expelled. But they're talking about the U.S. tariffs and what's going to go on there, but they're not going to affect any of the BRICS. You know, this South Africa, it's not like it's not going to impact anything occurring in BRICS because South Africa is still a part of BRICS, but the amounts of money or that they're trading in the others are really none. U.S., South Africa poses no threat to the U.S., especially in trade. You know, it's such a small partner there that it doesn't really matter. But every other one has basically told them to go pound sand. But South Africa is only 30%. And the U.S. doesn't want to alienate South Africa. For some reason, it doesn't mind doing it to Brazil, India, China, for sure. All about Russia. And they believe, and I think this is a bad plan for Trump, and that he has miscalculated completely, and or he's listening to the wrong people. I find him a pretty smart man. I have my issues with him, but I think he's a pretty smart guy. I think in this one he's missing the boat, and it ain't gonna work. So let's see. Let's go to what the Kremlin says. This is again Dmitry Peskov trying to talk about, I got some quotes from him here, about what he says is they're assessing internally in Russia their own beliefs as to what their trade partners, India, China specifically, but Brazil too, that all three of them, and he's assessed it as follows. Washington, of course, has warned India, China, Brazil of potential restriction over their imports of Russian energy. And the NATO ambassador, Matthew Whitaker, said the next obvious step is more sanctions and attacking these three people in an effort to end the conflict in Ukraine. But Peskov said, we hear many statements that are essentially threats and attempts to pressure countries into cutting trade relations with Russia. But we believe that sovereign states, and this is a common line, all four of these states have said it. We believe sovereign states should have and do have the right to choose their own trade partners, their partners for economic cooperation, and to independently determine the forms of cooperation that serve their own national interests. Now, that's an important statement, because It's the exact same thing that China said. It's the exact same thing that India has said. And it's the exact same thing that Brazil has said. Brazil was actually a little harsher. Well, China was more harsh. You know, in an interview with Bloomberg Monday, Whitaker claimed that purchasing Russian oil amounts to sponsoring hostility in the Ukraine conflict. What are we doing? We're not sponsoring. We're not sponsoring hostility in the Ukraine conflict, are we? That is freaking laughable. Where are all the weapons coming from, friends and neighbors? They're coming from the friends and neighbors. We're giving them up to Ukraine so they can fight this proxy war for us. And Trump isn't doing what I thought he was going to do, which is end this war. And sanctions are not going to end this war. Tariffs are not going to end this war. We'll see. Live and learn. I've been wrong before. I'm not wrong on this one, but we'll see next week if he really pulls the trigger on these sanctions, and if he does, what it does in the U.S. economy, and whether it makes Modi, makes Xi Jinping, or makes Lula bow down to the Trump gods. You know, I don't see that happening. So India, one of the largest importers of Russian crude, responded that it would, and it's, they've been pretty steady in saying this for the last 2 years, that India will safeguard its own national interests and economic security, calling the idea of targeting the country over energy purchases unjustified and unreasonable. They also, and I saw this earlier, that they put out a 5-point reply, and I tried to find it but couldn't find the actual document to it of what it actually said from India. But basically, it called the request by Trump hypocrisy. Said, look, what are you buying from Russia? Fertilizer. What are you buying from Russia? Uranium. What are you buying from Russia? Quite a few other things. Nothing huge, but you're buying. And they claim that in the beginning, the Biden administration wanted India buying Russian crude at the lower rate at 62. And then what Trump said in his own thing today, they're turning around, they're reselling it to us. That's because Biden wanted that. And they put it in a document today that said the document that they were buying it at $62 or whatever the cap was, and then selling it at a greater amount to the West, to Europe, and to the United States. And now Trump is going, these guys are making money off it. That's because that was the plan. So that it wouldn't impact the market is what they said. They were hiding it. So once again, you know, here we are in this drama scenario of playing hide the salami with crude oil and blaming somebody else and being hypocritical, according to India. So India says, you know what, we're going to safeguard our own national interests. Beijing likewise will defend its economic cooperation with Russia and said that China will always ensure its energy supply in a way that serves its own national interests. China will firmly defend its own sovereignty, security, and developed interests, said the Chinese Foreign Ministry on Monday, and said that coercion and pressure will not achieve anything. In July, Brazil condemned similar remarks by NATO Secretary General Mark Rutte about potential secondary sanctions on BRICS nations trading with Russia, calling them totally absurd. All three countries highlighted what they describe as Western hypocrisy toward importers of Russian energy by noting that both the U.S. and EU have maintained trade relations with Moscow. So, you know, this isn't going to work, okay? And I, you know, It's not going to help stop the war. It's not going to help U.S. economy. It's not going to bring anybody to their knees. And there was another story out here about where's Modi? Modi advisor. Top Modi advisor heads to Moscow for high-level talks. Okay. And get this. Indian National Security Advisor is scheduled to visit Russia this week to discuss defense and security matters. He's expected to hold talks with Russian officials and is likely to discuss the purchase of more S-400 air defense missile systems. India currently has three S-400 systems, part of a larger order of five purchased from Russia. The systems were put to use during the country's military confrontation with Pakistan in May. The visit, which was pre-planned, has taken on greater significance following Donald Trump's criticism of Indian oil imports from Russia. India is not only buying massive amounts of Russian oil, they are then, for much of the oil purchased, selling it on the open market for big profits. This is what I was just telling you, Trump said on True Social Monday. They don't care how many people in Ukraine are being killed by a Russian war machine. Now, I watched a video on YouTube of Jai Shankar, who I love listening to. I can't remember his first name. I can't pronounce it anyway. I'm lucky I learned Jai Shankar. And to be truthful, and I don't mean that in any bad way, and I don't, you know, want it to be offensive to Mr. Jai Shankar because I don't know his first name. But at any rate, I watched what he said specifically on this topic, and he called this specific line hypocrisy at every level, both from European nations and from the U.S. itself, because it is. It's highly hypocritical because what did they, what has anybody ever said about the dispute between China and India over the territory that they have? Did the U.S. ever not trade with China because they were so stressed out over the fact that China had a disagreement? Have they ever dumped Pakistan because they had a dispute, you know, or they felt for India? So he was pretty brutal in what they said. The days of the U.S. dictating whatever the rest of the world is going to do, hate to say it, I think they're pretty numbered. Like any major economy, India will take all necessary measures to safeguard its national interest and economic security. Sounds like a repeat, doesn't it? Said Foreign Ministry spokesman Jaiswal in a statement Monday. The targeting of India is unjustified and unreasonable. Gee, it's like a playbook. It's like reading a Democrat talking point memo. Maybe all three countries, Brazil, India, China, have all already decided. And South Africa is, you know, they've only been assigned a 30% anyway, and I'm not too sure they're buying much crude from Russia, too far away. But they also said, we hear a lot of statements that are actually threats trying to force countries to stop trading with Russia, said Peskov. We do not consider these statements to be legitimate. Sovereign countries have the right to choose their own trading partners. Sounds like a broken record for economic cooperation. To choose cooperation in the interests of that particular country, right? Indian Foreign Minister S, they don't even put his name in here, they just call him S. Jai Shankar, is also expected to travel to Russia later this month. Tell you what, better get ready for the fact that they're going to have to impose sanctions and, oh, geez, we're bringing in money for the U.S. That's going to be great. You can get money from imports, but there's another article that I don't think I have time to get into, but this one was about Modi specifically, and it said, sanctions first, allies later, India learns the cost of trusting the United States. Yeah. India stands at a challenging crossroads. A proposed U.S. Senate bill threatening a 500% tariff on countries importing Russian oil has cast a long shadow. With nearly half of its oil sourced from Russia, India could be forced to choose between economic pragmatism and geopolitical alignment. So this article was what was written several weeks ago, right? But now we hear that India they aren't gonna back down. That's been all over the news today. Here's one. Well, we won't go there. I wanted to get to a couple more, and I'm running out of time. Have you heard about democracy in Moldova? Moldova is a very pretty country. I'm not sure I'd want to be there these days. I liked being there for the 3-4 months that I was. Got a couple of interesting stories. The Moldova has jailed a Eurosceptic regional leader named Gagauzia Yevgenia Gutsul. She's been accused of illegally financing a banned political party. And she won the election, and now she's going to jail for 7 years. Sounds like something they wanted to do to Trump. You know, let Trump win and then throw him in jail. Here's another pretty funny one. That this is exciting. I like this story. This is kind of the what is that guy I always watch? Alex Christoforou. He has something at the end of all of his shows he calls the clown world, and he puts these ridiculous stories out of the day. Well, here's my version of that, but I won't call it clown world because I won't steal it. But it's a funny story, and it's entitled, "The Danish Zoo Wants to Feed Unwanted Pets to Predators." Isn't this great? Owners are invited to donate their healthy animals to be fed to the to the predators in the zoo. A zoo in northern Denmark has sparked public outrage by encouraging people to donate their unwanted pets, including guinea pigs, rabbits, chickens, and small horses, to be fed to carnivorous animals. Aalborg Zoo made the appeal in a Facebook post last week, claiming it aimed to imitate the natural food chain and provide proper nutrition to predators. Chickens, rabbits, and guinea pigs form an important part of the diet of our predators, said the post. That way, nothing goes to waste, and we ensure natural behavior, nutrition, and well-being of our predators. The zoo's website provides detailed guidelines for horse donations, requiring animals to be under 147 centimeters tall, in good health, and accompanied by proper documentation. Yeah, because the animals got to inspect it and make sure that what they're getting is what they've paid for, right? That's the bill. Donated horses are euthanized and slaughtered by zoo staff, with owners eligible for a small tax deduction based on the animal's weight. The announcement ignited fierce debate online. While some commentators support the idea as practical and humane, others condemn the zoo for promoting a terrible trend of indifference toward animals. One user, I'm crying. I got to wipe away a single tear here. Oh, goodness. One user called the initiative a deeply perverse and degrading mindset. Another sarcastically asked if they could donate healthy but annoying neighborhood children. I can't take it. This is not the first time the zoo has faced a backlash. In 2024, the zoo euthanized its last two African elephants one due to age and the other due to the lack of a suitable companion. This is classic. This brought an end to elephant keeping at the facility. A year earlier, another elephant was put down under similar circumstances. Denmark's zoos have drawn international criticism in the past for controversial culling practices. In 2014, Copenhagen Zoo killed a healthy giraffe named Marius. Oh, he had a name. Because his genes were not the right color. No, because his genes were deemed too common for breeding purposes. The zoo publicly dissected the carcass and fed it to the lions, triggering global condemnation. In neighboring Sweden, Furuvik Zoo faced scrutiny in December of 22 after staff shot and killed three chimpanzees that had escaped the enclosure. The zoo claimed the decision was necessary due to the risk posed by the animals, despite the park being closed at the time. Oh, I love it. Anyway, I'm sorry to laugh over all that. That's a very serious story. But can you imagine? I like the part. Can we give away small, healthy, but annoying neighborhood kids? Oh, I'm having too good a time at this tonight. I'm really sorry. Well, I tell you what, we're not going to end early. There's got to be some short article I can read to you about the Moldova lady instead of the Danish zoo, because I can't take it. I just can't take it no more. Let's see how long this... I might be able to get there. We'll just read a little bit of it. Yevgenia Gutzel, who denied the accusations that she was, following a banned party that she was sponsoring, is in prison, was convicted of receiving illegal campaign funds and funneling them to the Euroskeptic Party, which was banned in 2023. She was also accused of paying people to participate in anti-government protests organized by SOR in 2022. In addition to the prison sentence, she also has been ordered to pay 40 million Moldovan lei, which is $2.3 million, to the state. Svetlana Popin, former secretary of the SOR Central Office, was also sentenced 6 years in prison for the same case. These sentences can be appealed. Isn't that terrible? On numerous occasions, Gutzel has accused the Moldovan authorities of launching criminal proceedings against her in a bid to oust her from power, suggesting that they don't like the fact that I am trying to help the autonomous region's residents, because they're these regions that are trying to secede from Moldova and be Russian, right? U.S. won't put up with that. Geez, you can't have a referendum. Oh, that'd be terrible. You have a referendum. Who's going to run it? It's got to be the U.S., or somebody that the U.S. trusts, and certainly couldn't be done by anybody in Moldova. Oh, horror of horrors. It just wouldn't work. Anyway, I appreciate all of you being here tonight, and I appreciate you listening to the show. You can always listen to my show on reruns, if you'd like, internationalflavor.com. All of my shows get put out there and are there for your listening pleasure. And every topic is covered. I'm going to load this one up tonight and make sure that it is there. They're also very close to, you can get the schedule from damradio.com/schedule. You can always listen at damradio.com/live. You can download our Damn Radio app and be notified whenever shows are on. You can go to internationalflavor.com and download the podcast app. And every time I upload a new one, you will also be notified. And I also encourage you all to go out to my Facebook page, International Flavor, and like the page. I thank you for your attention. Look forward to Sunday with me and my discussion with Mr. Scott Ritter. I wish you all a very pleasant good night.